I met him 15 years ago. I was told there was nothing left. No reason, no conscience, no understanding, and even the most rudimentary sense of life or death, of good or evil, right or wrong. I met this six-year-old child with this blank, pale, emotionless face and the blackest eyes, the devil's eyes. I spent 8 years trying to reach him, and then another 7 trying to keep him locked up, because I realized that what was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
Dr. Loomis's monologue from the 1978 classic cult film Halloween goes down in history as one of many genre-defining horror performances that set the tone for horror films in the early 80s to the early 2000s, an era of the slasher film. This includes classics such as Scream, The Nightmare Before Elm Street series, The Friday the 13th series, Candyman, I Know What You Did Last Summer, a lot of 90s cult films, or at least from the 70s up to the 90s, where slasher films were most prominent. Notably, Candyman will be garnering a sequel released tentatively in June of 2020, taking place after the original film from the 1992 original film. It is now being directed by Nia DaCosta and produced by Jordan Peele. Horror has taken an interesting turn now as of 2011 onwards with films like The Cabin in the Woods, The Babadook, Get Out, and It Follows. Just like the slasher genre redefined what horror was for the 60s and 70s, horror of today is beginning to restructure that genre while simultaneously pulling inspiration from the former. In comparison to something like the 1963 film The Innocents or the 1973 film The Wicker Man, some of Ari Aster's finest works in this day and age, like Hereditary or Midsommar, respectively, pull major inspiration from the themes presented in the indie folk film circuit. In this episode, we're going to be discussing horror, what we've seen, predictions on how Gen Alpha will experience it, and what horror is to each of us. Hi, and welcome back to For Filth. This week's episode, as you know from the intro, is one of our big topic episodes, where basically the cast is going to dissect one topic, and we're just going to kind of pick it apart and come at it from our own personal views and see how things work from there. So since this week's topic is horror, obviously I chose it, and I wanted to ask the cast, like, you know, based on horror and films, what are some of our favorite films from, like, the horror genre?
I love a good horror movie. I'm a spooky ookie bitch. I love Halloween, October, and all that shit. So, like, when that time is, like, approaching, I get into, like, a vibe of, like, I need to watch the scary movies that I really like. And I like a lot of classic scary movies, but I think the scary movies that are the best are the ones that are like series or that have like sequels. Because like, I love following a story. So I love Paranormal Activity, even though a lot of people don't. But like, I love that story a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I love Insidious, both of those. Those are some really good ones. I don't have any like in particular, but I stand the scary movie and horror film genre. Like, I love watching anything that's gonna get me, like, my blood pumping and like scare the hell out of me.
Right.
And I'm the opposite. I do not like scary movies. I don't think it's cute. I was not raised to be watching demonic dark side of shit. Ooh. Other than like Harry Potter or whatever. But
like, demonic.
And I say that tongue in cheek because I actually really love supernatural content. I love high fantasy. I also love urban fantasy, anything that sort of like breaks the norm of reality and gives you that escapist kind of vibe. But I don't actually enjoy the idea of watching something to be scared or to like, you know, get my blood pumping or anything like that. It's just not really something I was really, I guess I grew accustomed to growing up. Mm-hmm. And so with that said, I am aware of some classic scary movies that I did enjoy. And oftentimes they do have some of those underlying themes. Like I really liked Carrie growing up. I actually enjoyed like Chucky and like even The Bride of Chucky. I liked some of those sequel films as well. Halloween, you know, I enjoyed Scary Movie and I saw Scream as well. So like I get the idea that some of these movies can be really cool, and I've like definitely watched a few more because of this particular topic, but it's definitely not my genre.
Yeah, you know what? Honestly, horror movies are kind of niche depending on what you like. And if you're already a person who suffers from anxiety or something, it's like a gateway drug if you get into horror movies and get too deep. Sometimes they can become a little problematic. So yeah. So when it comes to like films for me, I do love like, I remember when I was going to UF, I would literally take my meal plan. Don't know why I had one living off campus, but I would take my meal plan and I would go and be at Gator Dining, Broward, and I would consistently watch the Hellraiser series for no reason. Like, in public, like, do you understand how gory Hellraiser is?
That's one thing I can't do is gore, but like, yeah, I do know how fucking gory that show is. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, the Cenobites were literally like versions of sex demons in one version of Hellraiser, and then in another, they were like humans that ended up going to an extra like it was a different dimension, and they were like overtly crazed in like the ways that they enjoy pain. And so they took it to like the umpteenth level they possibly could in order to understand like how pain could become pleasurable for them. So like even like the ripping open of their face is like somehow pleasurable, or like the like prostheses that would like there was a girl who was like a smoker and she had her hole in her neck. That was ridiculous.
I mean, I'm not here to yuck anyone's yum. If that's what gets your rocks off.
I am.
Love if that. That's what gets your rocks off, girl, like, who am I to stand between you and pleasure, okay?
Right.
Go to jail.
Well, just for balance, I'm not applying that particular sentiment to this concept, because I actually think it's cool that fantasy, even if it's horrific fantasy, can give you an outlet to explore themes that you can't do elsewhere. So I think that's really important in this context.
The definition of horror is a painful and intense fear, dread or dismay, intense aversion or repugnance, or a state of extreme depression or apprehension. The first horror film in history was a 3-minute short film by the name of Le Manoir du Diable, or The Haunted Castle / The House of the Devil for English viewers in 1896. The film told the story of a woman stumbling through a cave populated by spirits and skeletons of people who had died there. Fun, sis. I'm not sure why you're walking through the cave, but go off. For some, this idea of the dead or something was horror, but of course, that's up to the audience that's viewing it. Horror can look so different for many different types of people and different backgrounds. Let's say, for instance, for Black people, films like The Birth of a Nation and its white supremacist creators and message, or that band Nickelback, could be considered horror. For me, that mid-2000s boom where white Christian girls with white generational wealth running around listening to The Fray was basically horror. Or one of my favorites, the Illuminati rumors about Rihanna's Umbrella video being a metaphor for being cummed on by Satan, which is actually kind of fierce. Yeah, that's horror.
Better spray yourself, hon. You're not supposed to be in here.
I've got to use the telephone.
You're not supposed to be in here. I think you have a cold. No. Clean telephone. Just think you can walk in here like that. Did you know that the germs can come through the wires? I never call and I never answer. That's a good way to get sick. Very, very sick. That's how I got so sick. Someone called me on the telephone!
What's going on here? Who are you?
My name is Grace Collier, and I write for the Staten Island Panorama, and I must use the telephone.
No! No! Don't give it to her, girl!
She won't use it, Arlene. She won't. Trust me.
Horror films in their early inception, quite frankly, began as spirits, demons, or monsters, preying on the insecurities of humans' most basic fear, the unknown. Something intangible, unseen, and/or more powerful than itself. Something higher on the food chain, as always. My favorite part of this can look different for multiple types of people. Taking it from a cultural background, for the Japanese, yurei, or angry spirits like Kayako, those are things that are completely different. Spirits are something that are ingrained in Japanese culture. Kayako is from the critically acclaimed Ju-on series from 1998, or for our Americans, The Grudge, which starred Sarah Michelle Gellar. English-speaking audiences in the early 2000s were more focused on slasher films, but the early 2000s slasher films that were basically remakes of the 90s drop-offs. Premier Japanese horror films like Ugetsu or Onibaba from the 60s and 70s are scene setters, tone setters, and genre benchmarks for a lot of later Japanese films like Dark Water or even the Japanese original for One Missed Call that also made its way to American audiences in the form of the chilling ringtone for the mid-2000s. For American audiences, the late 80s upwards to the early 2000s were sprawled with cult classics like the Halloween series with Michael Myers, or The Nightmare on Elm Street with Freddy Krueger, and even the teen meme slasher parody Scream with Ghostface.
I think horror movies too, like even just the genre, there's such like a lax feeling about it. Like you can make horror funny in some ways.
Yeah,
you know, you can have it be very serious, you can have it be like kind of newer or like a little bit of like an older style of horror. So there's like so many ways that you can go about it. Some horror movies are like deeper than other ones. Some of them are more like surface value, kiddie pool level depth, and then some of them are like, you know, very crazy how like introspective they get. So yeah. I think horror, you can just get away with a lot more. And also, you're already kind of expecting the gore and, like, the fright aspect of it. So it's kind of just, like, being able to build on top of that. And a lot of other movies, you can't really do that. It's kind of like a one-trick pony kind of thing with other genres.
Right. So mentioning the one-trick pony, let's talk about this shift that we've seen between, like, the archetype of the jock, the virgin, the white woman that is like extremely sexually exploited by writers or directors, that whole thing, and how that has changed moving into 2020 and like what that looks like beyond. How have you all seen horror change?
I think it's gotten a little less corny. Actually, I'm not going to say that.
Yeah,
that might be a little bit too generalized of a statement, but I think the standard of horror movies were very archetypal, like you just said. Like they were very beginning, middle, end. You had your characters that, you know, were tropes that would get filled in with different actors and actresses, and it would kind of go the same way. And you kind of get that kind of over and over again, just in different scenarios. So it's almost like watching a sitcom, and sitcoms can't go on forever. Sitcoms eventually just get bored of the same people in the same situations over and over again. Mm-hmm. So I think at a certain point, meaning like movie execs or anything like that, like they eventually just probably started moving to like a different way to scare people. And I think that people are just scared of different things.
Like, yeah, I was gonna say that that's definitely it. People are scared of different shit now, and what they can work with as far as teasing out the horror elements of a story is just different material now because of the culture changing.
Yeah, but even just think about like how far we've gone from that whole archetype style horror movie. At this point, like, people in movies will like make fun of that stuff. Like, oh, like in a movie, you'll hear like it, like someone say like, oh, like, you know, the hot girl always dies first, or the black character always dies first, or the gay character always dies first. And that's like because it's such a overplayed thing in so many movies that like all the minorities go first, and then there's like one white man that survives or something, like, or one white woman maybe.
Can I play devil's advocate on that?
Let's go.
I think that it's funny that you mentioned that, because I know one thing that I personally experience when I do end up watching horror movies is I kind of excitedly declare like, oh, that nigga's dead, or oh,
yeah, I do,
they're killing that bitch. So it's almost like terrible how it's become almost part of the culture and part of the genre to have these tropes and how have them played out. And I don't know if it always removes the actual entertainment value, because sometimes it's actually part of the experience. Is like, especially because in my experience as a writer and someone who's like, you know, sort of studied the way people craft stories and do storytelling, a lot of times it's actually the most tried and true tropes that actually make a genre what it is, as opposed to detract from it.
Yeah.
So it's about choosing like how you make that feel new, as opposed to really finding something new.
Yeah.
Almost. So it's interesting to think about how like it's actually almost part of the experience to be like, yep, black guy's dying first, and it happens.
Exactly. And that's what I feel like. I feel like horror in itself, it kind of sells this experience.
Yeah.
But before, it was more like, oh, like you want this package, we're gonna give it to you in this movie. Like, it's just gonna like be the same thing. I think now when people walk into a scary movie, like, they're more so leaving kind of like if you saw like Hereditary at the movie theater, like, and you walked out, you would probably be just like completely shook. Like, I know I was after I first saw it. I was like very just like speechless.
But the gag with Hereditary was, I was like, I'm not scared of this.
Yeah, it wasn't as scary. There were some scary moments, but like, it wasn't as scary. And I think that's kind of like the new wave of horror movies too. They're not as much like down to your core frightening. They're more adrenaline boosting, you know, fight or flight inducing kind of films.
Yeah, and the films these days, I guess from my perspective, have changed in the sense that they're not attacking your base fears anymore. They're not going for the obvious, I don't want my throat slit. Like,
right.
Technically, I don't want my throat slit. Like, I'm interested in the idea of dying, but I'm not interested in the idea of doing it gruesomely. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm not interested in being, like, thrown off of a bridge because, you know, I fucked over somebody. I'm interested in that existential horror where isolationism, which is like a huge theme in Ari Aster's films, where that kind of creates the horror in itself. Like, horror for Ari Aster is isolationism from like dissociating or mental health completely alienating you from your friends and family, or isolationism in the sense of like being isolated within your own relationship and not understanding how you can be emotionally distant but yet still trying to express yourself to someone. Like, there are so many themes now where, you know, people can say it's funny, but I guess millennials, Gen Z and Gen Alpha are going to be writing and directing horror films from the idea that I'm not scared about the person outside. I'm actually scared of myself.
Might be something you want to say.
Yeah.
Like what? I mean, why would I want to say something so I could watch you sneer at me?
Sneer at you? I don't ever sneer at you.
Oh, sweetie, you don't have to. You get your point across.
Okay, so fine, then say what you want to say then.
Peter.
I don't want to say anything. I've tried saying
things. Okay, so try again. Release yourself.
Oh, release you mean?
Yeah, fine, release me. Just say it. Just fucking say it.
Don't you swear at me, you little shit! Don't you ever raise your voice at me! I am your mother! Do you understand? All I do is worry and slave and defend you. And all I get back is that fucking face on your face. So full of disdain and resentment and always so annoyed. Well, now your sister is dead. And I know you miss her. And I know it was an accident. And I know you're in pain. And I wish I could take that away for you. I wish I could shield you from the knowledge that you did what you did. But your sister is dead. She is gone forever. And what a waste. If it could have made maybe brought us together or something. If you could have just said, I'm sorry, or faced up to what happened, maybe then we could do something with this. But you can't take responsibility for anything. So now I can't accept. And I can't forgive. Because nobody admits anything they've done!
Yeah, that's very interesting. Because I feel like now more so than ever, horror is more about psychology than anything. It's not as much about, let's find this external, really scary thing, like being stalked or being, you know, the victim of a mass murderer or a serial killer, things like that. It's more so, like, what's going to make you, like, to your core, like, look inside and be like, damn, I'm scared. Like, this is, like, an insecurity or, I don't, like, just, like, something that's going to induce anxiety in literally anybody. And that's okay. What I think a lot of the new movies are doing.
I think part of it, too, is that fear as a concept is being redefined because I feel like less people are sort of conditioned to see, like, boo, gotcha, as, like, actually a valid, scared, like, experience of fear.
Yeah,
I think that we're just more so afraid of ourselves than ever because we have more time to think about it.
True.
More, like I know so many people who like will watch films about, you know, mental illness or about the way that, you know, society reacts and interacts with the individual and vice versa, and then come out of that like, damn, like, yeah, like if that was me, like how would I handle that? As opposed to, oh, that monster was like really, really well rendered and scared the shit out of me and slit her throat real good. Like, it's just a different experience.
Right.
The thing that I also am thinking about, that now that you said that, like, fear is different, I feel like back then, a lot more people, mainly because I feel like more people were, like, more religious back then.
Yeah.
They were more scared of demons, more scared of the supernatural in the sense of, like a religious being, or not a religious being, but like a being that's talked about in religious texts. Like, I feel like that was more of a theme back then and not as much now. Even like vampires too. Like, there are so many ways that like demons and vampires have kind of been like normalized in a lot of ways, whereas they're not as much scary to people anymore. Because I know, like, a lot of, like, I think the first horror movie that I ever saw was An Interview with a Vampire, which is it's an old book that was turned into a movie. My dad was, like, obsessed with it. And it used to scare me, but it was actually a scary movie. Like, mm-hmm. Now, like, if you watch, like, any sort of media with vampires in it, it's more so going to be, like, a drama than a scary movie or a scary show.
Yeah.
And like with demons, I'm watching The Good Place right now, and almost everyone in that show is a demon, but it's like kind of like a tongue-in-cheek, like funny comedy, you know?
It's
so
because it's, of the familiarity now. We have
more familiarity with that. People people making hell jokes all the time. Ain't nobody scared of hell at this point, so.
It's all in close proximity.
People be like, send me to hell. I'm like,
Even me, know. Sometimes I feel an itch in my back.
Yeah, sometimes I'm like,
people say that. I'm still a little bit indoctrinated on that. I don't like playing with themes like that. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you. I think on what you're getting at for sure is that society and our culture has shifted to a point where, on a broad level, right, our media and our like sort of, I guess, like, concept of these things is not held with the same sort of regard and like the same sort of like esteem and reverence, mm-hmm. right? So people can be irreverent about religion. They can be irreverent publicly about, you know, how they really feel about the ghosts and demons and angels and shit like that in a way that they might not have been able to be before. So now the real fear is like, oh, the real life, like your mind and the way that your mind can play tricks on you.
I feel like real life scares people a lot more than anything else. Like, just like the idea of like being alive.
And what that actually means.
Yeah. Like,
yeah. And I mean, fear has shifted in the sense that like we've gone from these analog kind of archaic versions of horror with the spirits and ghosts, like Caputo was saying, or this idea of the vampires. That no longer scares people because we're constantly looking down into a screen or a phone. And
the real problem is that we have to kind of look at ourselves all the time, either through our social media or through our friends posting about us through social media. There was even like a horror movie boom of like social media based horror, which was like AI unfriended. You get even like existential kind of like thriller slash horror films like Ex Machina, and movies like that. Like horror has really kind of shifted also because of technology.
Yeah, tech horror, girl.
Yeah, tech horror is Black Mirror. Like that's not necessarily a horror series, but it can really freak you out and fuck up how you feel about the phones sitting next to you. Like, I know my FBI agent is listening, but I don't care about the FBI agent. I care about them, like, you know, putting me in the White Bear episode where I did something wrong and then they make me relive it every single day for, like, my life sentence.
Oh, see, that was scary.
That was scary.
Just watching people in a state like that is, like, really terrifying. Just, like, her at the end when, like, they're kind of explaining everything that was going on and how she helped her husband do all that shit. Like... Mm-hmm. That shook me like to my core. I was like, damn, and you don't remember any of it, but you're being punished eternally. Like, that is wild to me. Like, that scared me. That definitely scared me.
There's this feeling, I think, in our society that like we have the world kind of figured out. I feel like a lot of our society has convinced us that like humans kind of got this shit unlocked. Like, we know demons aren't real. We know that like, you know, this reality shit is like real low key kind of simple and it is what it is kind of a thing. Mm. And so I feel like on some level, there's this visceral reaction to the concept that day-to-day life as we know it is being challenged, like reality is being challenged in some way. And I think that's where a lot of the potency of that fear comes from. Like, the idea of waking up from your everyday life, like very much Matrix style, and realizing like this shit is completely fake and I don't actually know anything. That is scary.
The fear of like the unknown, like just being completely untethered and kind of just like
from,
like you're not grounded, like you're kind of just like floating around.
Right. I mean,
we're getting real meta.
Yeah, I mean, even mentioning Tethered, like that's part of a film that we all know, which is the film Us by Jordan Peele. Where it ends up talking about like the reflections of like how we feel versus how others feel and how others view us. It even goes into themes of like cloning, but it's not really about cloning. It's about the side of you no one is supposed to see, and you keep it hidden until, you know, the end game, and then people finally get to see it, and there's like all this backlash from it. And it like juxtapositions your main personality versus the one that you've kind of come up with in order to code switch. Like, even code switching is a theme in that film. Like, fear even has changed to the idea that like it's not just about like social justice. Like, even social justice is fearful. Like, can be a fear-based mechanic you can put into a film like Get Out. Because it's, and this isn't meant to be funny, but like I can actually see someone wanting a black body to use it for their own means because they believe that it's the better race, but you know, it's like the better body just because of race archetypes and things like that. And it's only so far-fetched because, I mean, the Germans did it when they ended up losing at the Olympics. I can't remember the guy, but he outran them and Hitler was like, yeah, girl, like these, you know, monkeys are much more powerful. Like, they have legs and arms that are meant for racing. It's like you're competing humans against animals.
And that's like the really scary thing too, is like the really scary movies are the ones that like you leave and you're like, that could almost happen like tomorrow.
Or that is happening.
Or like or if it exposed something, exactly. Because then again, like you leave with this like idea that your whole world has been questioned, everything that you thought was true maybe isn't true. So that's like a very like different thing that goes on in the present horror movies compared to the past ones.
Let's actually zoom in on that. What is the culture behind horror? What is culture? As discussed, we are not scared of the mass murderer outside. For those of us of color, we're scared of the police, of the government, or the infrastructural and systemic racism permeating not just the United States, but any Anglo-Saxon Aryan-backed society that has peddled the dark narrative around the world that somehow black people are not humans. We are just bodies, living, walking, labor-induced bodies. The funny thing is, in some dystopic way, Black people are basically the enemy. And in that same breath, Black people are actually the culture. We are the product, the money, the institutions, the blueprint. What would Iggy Azalea and Kylie Jenner have if not for the Black lexicon and narrative they've stolen to create their fame? Get Out, a film by Jordan Peele, explored this topic extensively, exposing viewers of color, specifically Black people, what a dystopic society could look like where the purchasing of my body is not limited to the NBA or my labor. It is the purchasing of my legitimate body, my actual consciousness. The following clip from American Gods comes from the African deity Anansi, explaining to his Egyptian Sumerian-inspired colleagues the horror of colored skin in the world now.
I choose peace.
Peace is a beautiful but shitty idea. Only a goddess can adorn the sarcophagus of a god. So help me understand what these new gods give it. And what they take it away. I am not a god. In the sense that I can tolerate exploitation, oppression, and repression, my worshippers know. Freedom ain't free. They know the most potent weapon of control for the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed. They know slavery is not a condition. Slavery is a cult. Human trafficking is a cult. Slavery got a rebrand like motherfucking the alt-right. And snatched. Another one gone. Every 30 seconds, another chocolate, brown, caramel, yellow, high yellow, red bone refugee girl with melanin in her skin gets snatched. Every 30 seconds. And to make matters worse, these dazzling new plantation owners built a pipeline to take our children from school to prison quicker than a cut can bleed. And the lucky ones go from school to the NFL, where they don't even let them niggas take a knee. They've been programmed from birth with shitty food options, contaminated drinking water, gun violence, police brutality, and trauma after trauma after trauma. PTSD, no therapy. Missing, no Amber Alert. Alone. Vulnerable. Snatched. Another one gone.
So are we kind of, it feels like, but I want to make sure we're like clarifying this. Are we like getting to this idea that fear or horror or the genre or experience of horror requires like a paradigm shift in someone? Or is it just that base fear response? Or is it both?
To me, it is both. Because you can have a shift in cognition, like when you're watching a film like Shutter Island with Leonardo DiCaprio, right, where in one end you thought, oh, please, like mental health. Yeah. I understand mental health. I get that. You know, people with dissociative identity disorder, I already know what they feel like. But for me in real life, living through it from ages 16 to 18, I understand that when the film starts, I have a completely different perspective than like the white woman with the perfect life who's never dealt with dissociative identity disorder. And then she sees the film, and at the end, you realize that Leonardo DiCaprio himself, his character, has been living through multiple personalities, dealing with multiple scenarios, and he's just living on an island where they have created the scenarios to keep him at bay because medications don't work and they don't really have anything to tether him to. They create an anchor through a story. It's a complete paradigm shift. But then there's also the base fear of like, wow, if I lose my mind, I might never know. I could think that my life is perfectly fine.
Oh yeah. That gets me.
dementia, like that shit scares me like nothing.
Alzheimer's, I mean, like my mom's family has a huge history. Every single sister prior to my mom's gen had Alzheimer's, like once they hit 60. So it's like the scariest thing for me. It's another type of fear. It's like that familial disease fear, which we're going through right now. Familial fear of like if everyone in her family has gotten Alzheimer's and like even my mom shows signs of memory loss, you know, what's to say I couldn't get it.
Yeah I really like that this is like the new direction of scary movies in a way, because I always feel like I gravitated more towards thrillers anyway, because I'm just not a gore person. Same. And a lot of the ones when I was growing up, it was a lot of slasher films, a lot of like murderer films and things, and I wasn't really into watching blood or anything like that, anyone getting stabbed. So I think now I really like that one of my favorite genres, which is like thriller movies and horror, are kind of like coming one in the same almost, or not one in the same, but they're definitely like having space to like combine in a way. And I love that, because it's just a much better like watching experience for me. And it's just like, it makes me think, like the cogs in my brain are like really wrapping my head around like these movies and like how like I could be affected by something going on in this movie, or it's talking about me or someone in my life. And I'm like,
Yeah, to make a faggot reference, like, you know, for the audience, it's just like, you know, drawing on eyebrows for drag. They're never going to be sisters. They're always going to be cousins. You're never going to get them both to look symmetrical. And like horror and psychological thrillers have always shared a lot of traits, but they've never been one and the same, just because of the way that we've kind of viewed horror as like, oh my God, I'm going to die, when dying is not the ultimate.
It really is not. It is not.
Dying is the easy way out.
Dying is cute.
Dying is the easy way out, honestly.
Now that a lot of us are a little bit, I don't want to say free from, because, you know, I don't know if that's ever possible, but a lot of us are divorced from the concept of like, I die and I go to this scary place. A lot of us have just, or either don't think about it or don't care about that concept now. So a lot of us are really just like thinking about living and how difficult living is. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's where like you get into the concept of the thriller, because the thriller is about like survival, not necessarily always from death, but from the unknown, whatever that is.
Agreed. So now that we've kind of like moved into this conversation about how it has changed, how do you think the Gen Alpha is going to experience horror? Because I think for millennials, we experienced it in a shifting change, kind of like how our generation is characterized by the shifting of the analog to the digital. So we went from, you know, the Motorola Razr, where you flip that shit up and it was fierce and everyone wanted one, to the idea that everyone has a smartphone. We live through the iPod gen. We live through the touchscreen like transition. And now we're just going to straight digital. The horror genre is kind of doing that. And the alpha generation is now going to just be immersed in it. Like, this is all they're going to know.
Generation Alpha is the generation after Gen Z.
Yeah. They're like, right now, Generation Alpha is like 9 years old or younger.
That's a hard one to gauge. I know for me personally, even the conversation you just sort of brought up about how for us, it was like the transition into sort of emerging technology as like one of the big sort of like resonant themes. I know for me as a child, like I'm a Haitian American person, I'm a Black person, but I'm the child of immigrants. And a lot of the sort of like, I guess, atmosphere and sort of like social conditioning I experienced growing up was actually one of confronting modernity still. Like I was still dealing with like my mom's family believing certain things about the world that like my you know, friends and stuff like that in school didn't believe. Like this concept of like dealing with the Western world or like maybe even mainstream white America in a way that was really jarring. And so the fear and the horror and the thrillers, sort of whatever that content was, the media that resonated with me was actually a lot of times more so to do with confronting old traditions and old stories about the way the world actually works from almost like a supernatural perspective, as opposed to necessarily like anything else. Like that was those were the themes that resonated with me most. Like, okay, like are demons real? Are angels real? Is God real? Like that sort of stuff. Now, I do agree with you though that that's super I guess, like, important for all of us in our generation still, because I did grow along up alongside the internet. But I don't think that's going to necessarily change for people who are 9 years old right now, because I think we're still learning what the internet really means for society now. Like, we're defining the rules for whether or not the internet is a free space as we speak. So I wonder if by the time those girls are, like, you know, getting into their 18, you know, like, they're like in their preteens into their adolescence, I wonder how resonant those themes were going to be, because they're going to be dealing with the sort of consequences of our decisions.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I guess I think
it'll be like an echo of that.
Mm-hmm. It's like horror for me, I guess, in my early years was the thing that scared me the most was Stephen King's It. It was the film that freaked me out and made me the most scared of horror, period. It was the only film that ever scared me that way. And then now that I look back on it, that's not what scares me. What scares me now completely is this idea of kind of the world ending, and also dissociation, like mental health issues are my fears. So I guess for Gen Alpha, similar to you, my question for the, like, what I'm thinking is, how would horror look for a generation that is going to probably grow up in, like, a very, like, mental health positive, like, us as parents are going to be, like, looking at them and saying, like, you definitely should look into therapy. That's an option for you. So they're not going to see mental health as, like, a scary thing. So what's going to scare Gen Alpha?
I think it's going to be emerging technology, because we're getting already into VR and, like, AI.
Mm-hmm.
As, like, huge themes in like, that's going to be big for them, because we're going to see the limits of our technology really expand in the next 20 years.
Mm-hmm. I was about to say that, because even before we were talking about Black Mirror, and that one episode with the AI video game, like the horror movie video game, I feel like that could possibly be the way to do that, because we were just talking about the way that horror is now. It's becoming very personal and, like, individualized. Mm-hmm. And what better way to make a scary movie personal than to put you in the scary movie? You know?
Yeah.
And I feel like once that technology has been, you know, peaked, that's what we're going to get a lot of our horror from. It's like actually putting ourselves physically, or not physically, but mentally in a horror movie.
We also have to remember that our generation, another sort of resonant theme or resonating theme for us is actually the dystopian film. And even though the dystopian film is not always a horror film, it's actually a very scary one for a lot of people, because it feels extremely real and it feels like it's coming, right? So let's say that those 9-year-olds don't actually get to that version of the future. All they have left is, like, the sort of continual progress, technological progress that we could project after having survived, you know, like, a potential world pandemic like this one, or an apocalypse of some sort, right? Like, let's say they actually get to that idealized, super hyper technologically advanced future. That's what's going to be scary, is, like, the limits of that, confronting that, and potentially maybe even, depending on what space travel looks like at that point, right? That sort of stuff.
And that's what I was saying about, like, psychology too, because when you look at, like, the generations, whenever you, like, anyone breaks it down, they'll always say that millennials have a more pessimistic view of the future, or they're just more cynical and jarred by the future. And then Generation Z are the ones that have the more hopeful view of the future. So, like, I think a lot of those movies, a lot of dystopian movies, they scare different people. Again, just depending on the time that they were growing up and, like, what was going on. Right now, obviously, everything's going to shit. So, like, dystopian things are scaring the people that are consuming horror movies now. But who's to say that the world's going to look the same when this Generation Alpha is, like, coming to age and actually, like, having their first memorable experiences?
I mean, some of these girls, their grandparents might be uploading themselves onto the internet and just living on. We don't know.
Black Mirror, Sandra Perro.
Yo, okay.
That was an episode.
That was an episode.
I don't even watch Black Mirror. And, like, that has always been this thing in the back of my head that I always wondered about. Like, what if by the time us niggas get to, you know, an advanced age, we end up doing that shit and we realize that's what has been going on this whole time, our whole lives? Like, that's always been this weird, like, I guess, internal fantasy that I've contended with is like questioning the nature of the reality that I'm currently living in, how truly quote unquote real it even is, and what reality even is. Like, there's just all these questions that I haven't given myself the time to really tease out, because either I would not be able to, or because life as it is so all consuming that I don't have the capacity to like even give it that space. But one day, you know, somebody's going to turn that into horror on some level. And I guess it might be those people.
And that is scary, because when you think about it, I've thought about that when, because you mentioned it, and Black Mirror San Junipero came up, because that's exactly what happened in that film. I mean, episode. But what's funny is, like, the real problem to me that was fearful was the idea of immortality, mm-hmm. like constantly living. Like, imagine what that looks like. Like, not to bring it to anime, but there's Bond and the Seven Deadly Sins, and of course.
But yeah, sometimes people
You're immortal. I think that's actually the scary part. Mm-hmm. Knowing you're not going to die is actually scarier than.
Yeah, that's where I was going.
Yeah.
I mean, some people see living forever as a blessing. Some people see it as a curse. So it could be someone's worst nightmare, but also someone's like biggest wish.
Yeah. Imagine a film where like the person opens up in the film and it's like they're living their everyday life and it's really cool and they got all this technology at their hands and like, wow, this is amazing. And then like maybe 30 minutes into the film, you start seeing like in the background that like there's like maybe a time period shift in people's clothes and you're like, what the fuck is going on? And then by the end of the film, like the moral of it was that this person has been alive for so long, they can't tell what time period they're in. And at the end, it's like, you know, they end up just killing themselves over that whole thing. They find a way and they do it. And
again, like seeing someone's like mental stability break down in front of you, like that is one of the scariest things for me. And even if it's not like something like dementia, but even someone in that situation where they're like living forever, but they don't necessarily know it, and they're just like starting to piece things together, like that's scary. That's because again, like you're putting yourself into that person's, you know, thought process of, oh my gosh, everything that I thought was true about my life is a complete lie. And I'm not living this life that I thought I was, and everything is wrong. And that's a little like earth shattering for people, especially me. And like, I would not be able to handle that. So.
Establishing that Gen Alpha will be experiencing horror from a technological perspective, let's round this off with one of my favorite shows, Observing the New Gods of the Modern Times, Technology, Media, and Mr. World. American Gods juxtapositions the ethos and mythos behind deities of the past and the modern world's anchors to reality. In short, the gods of the past were modeled after concepts. Life, death, the harvest, the sun, the planets, all of these tangible assets of the quote-unquote real world turned into things that we could worship because they sustained us. Now, what we worship is in our hands. Technology is all-encompassing and technically all-accessible to those within the margins of society that have the privilege to have access to it. So what is fear now, since we're talking about it from a technological perspective? Inaccessibility, racism, prejudice, Aryans, diseased, death. Mr. World, a new god representing the embodiment of globalization and society, describes fear from a theoretical concept, from this theoretical position that it doesn't actually exist. Everything that is based around fear and horror is made up. It's all in your head. Thanks, Drag Race. People like the idea that love makes the world go round. It doesn't. You don't lock your doors at night because you love thy neighbor. You deadbolt it with reinforced steel because you fear thy neighbor. Fear is order. Fear is control. Fear is safety. Fear is fiction. 80 years ago, actor Orson Welles announced to audiences in a chilling radio performance that Martians were invading New Jersey, leading terrified listeners to believe that the Earth was under attack by hostile aliens. Before this moment, people in America didn't conceive of what an alien spacecraft might look like. They did not believe an alien attack could happen. What made it real was the fear that it could exist, and the fact that it was feared so deeply meant that it did exist. Believing is seeing. Fear is the product of the imagination. It's made up in the mind. The mind can dream and think of literally anything. You love fear. You love horror. You pay money for a pair of three-dimensional glasses and popcorn for an hour and a half of anxiety. Something on earth that keeps people thinking is the idea that it could end at any moment. Fear has no end. Fear is literally limitless. Fear thrives and feeds on itself, preparing you for calamity, preparing you to believe that the most important things are the most dangerous. If it's real in your mind, it's real in the world. The more you believe, the more you believe. Hope is not just a concept. Hope is a form of currency. It is transactional. Similar to the sexual marketplace, something is required to exchange for another product. Sorry, incels. Attractiveness, body type, race, etc. In the modern day, these have all become forms of currency, adding up bit by bit into a point system to purchase the attention of another, and if you're lucky, a person to share life experiences with for a type of love that is not familial or platonic, but singular and new. Horror writers manipulate hope as a form of currency to create the universe they thrust you into. They manipulate that former form of currency to use a point system to polarize you, to poke you, to prod you, to get you to have a reaction of some sort to the theme that they've played around with. Horror in itself is the Play-Doh, and we are the manipulator of the Play-Doh's form. It twists, churns, manipulates, contorts, and constricts hope to incite a reaction, whether through a ray of light at the end of the tunnel in The Descent, or that crippling decision of the father at the end of The Mist, where he chooses to shoot his own young son, about age maybe 8 or 9, and the rest of the entourage to quote-unquote avoid the monsters from getting him, only for the military to show up a few seconds later to basically save them. Almost anticlimactic, but actually horrible, because for a split second, maybe the child could have survived. Horror in itself is a polarizer.